From Paul's house and Storm's house, it's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
Women get woolly.
It's not your fault. It's not your fault. It's not your fault. I'm Paul.
I'm Storm.
And we're going to talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. Tonight, it's Tuesday, June 15th, 2010.
And you are listening to show number 087, the real show 87 this time.
Like the real Ghostbusters.
Yeah, exactly. We mislabeled the previous, the car cast we did, the van cast, whatever you want to call it, as show 87.
This is the one with the cute Slimer and all of that.
Yes.
So don't worry. This one's the real one.
That's right.
The one bit of business. We have 319 minions in the Paul and Storm Brigade of Minions.
Yes, we do.
Currently, there are still 31 slots left to become a Switchblade Lothario, so hurry up. I'm talking to you at Wilwa, because those spots are going to go fast.
You just laid down a big, fat gauntlet there, didn't you?
I speak from the heart.
And you're also assuming he listens to our podcast.
I'm assuming he doesn't, but I'm assuming a lot of the people that do follow this person on Twitter, and it's really a service to him.
Because that's right. That's true.
Because he's a man of honor, and if he doesn't make it in under the wire, who knows what we're going to name the next crop of 50. Who
that's
knows?
That's right. That's right.
And, of course, you folks need to get in on that, too.
Yes, so. You do. How's it going, Storm?
I'm doing all right. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing all right. I am at this point pretty much fully recovered from the weekend. The weekend,
yeah.
Of course, being Woodstock's 2.2 and 2.3.
And if you're up for it, as I am, as we I guess we skipped last week because there was too much excitement, I wouldn't mind going a little long on this one to cover all the territory that
why,
we have to cover.
Why, no, Storm, I would not mind that.
And, you know, as has become our way, of course, we'll talk out our asses about ourselves. But for those who go, oh, man, you're talking about yourselves, we'll give you a little extra beforehand.
Yeah, we'll do some other stuff at first so you have some value.
And I have a whole page of notes of different stuff we can talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And at least for now, I am shoving it all aside. Here, listen. You probably couldn't hear that. I'm shoving it all aside.
I heard a sound that sounded absolutely nothing like any sort of shoving.
I have a very good pop filter on the microphone.
Apparently you do. It's also a shove filter. So, nonetheless, you have shoved your notes aside. Why have you shoved your notes aside, Storm?
I'll tell you why. You actually know why, but you folks...
I do, but I'm playing the
there,
game.
I know. And I was meta-ing your meta.
You were. It's a battle of who's more meta.
You know, it's mutually assured meta-destruction.
That's the name of something, some cover band that I can't think of right now because I'm not feeling my oats right now.
No, we used a lot of those oats these past weekends, and we'll get to that. Oh, yes, we will.
Oh, yeah.
No, I am shoving aside because, as most of you know, we put out on our Twitter feed, Paul and Storm, at Paul and Storm, a request for topic suggestions every week. And I swear, the second after we put the call out, the first response was from our patron goddess, Felicia Day.
Wait, this is the Felicia Day theme. Wait a minute.
You're not getting
you hear this at all?
The melodica, are you?
No.
No, you must have a very good pop filter on your microphone as well.
Well, I've got this. Here, wait a minute. I'm going to make this work. Wait, here we go. Hold on.
Oh, do you have the Felicia Day Goddess Sound app? Oh, I see. You're attempting to play the guild theme on the keyboard.
No, actually, what I'm doing is I've got this little What is the word for the little the player piano roll type thing, except it's just a little toy?
It's this, toy piano. Let's go with
that.
It's
not a toy piano, but it's one of those little things where you turn the crank and it makes this little new music.
It is an airship.
It is an airship. But anyway, it's just sort of a cute little angelic sound. I happen to have this little toy here. My daughter was playing with it or something. And it makes this happy little Beatles tones that make us think of the lovely Felicia Day.
And I'm glad that you've played that, because it sets the mood for what her actual topic suggestion was.
I'm going to continue to play this at a herky-jerky tempo.
And yes, Felicia Day, the woman who is at least somewhat responsible for the early momentum of this podcast, has suggested that we talk about, and I quote, your butt. And that's all we need. The notes are gone. Now, a question I have for you, Paul.
Okay. I cannot wait to see where this is going.
Well, it can go. I don't know. I honestly don't know. But the first thing we have to do is parse that, because we are two people and she has referenced one butt.
She could be telling us to talk about a pork butt. And in fact, I could talk at length about a pork butt.
It was, well, you have already talked about that pork butt.
Did I talk about that on the podcast? I probably did.
Yeah, you don't get a butt like that and not talk about it.
I suppose that's true.
There it is. And you know, I'm throwing it to you first, Paul.
Oh, thanks for that.
Talk about your butt.
Talking about my butt?
Talk about your butt.
Okay. I'm going to try and keep this safe for the dinner hour, so to speak.
This being a heavy dinner listening demographic.
Well, yeah, you know what I mean, though. Like,
sure. I don't want to make anyone throw up.
Yeah, I'm not going to go all disgusting. And you know what? First, I'm going to turn down the recording level on this microphone a bit because I'm peeking all over the place. So hold on while I reach over here. Yoink.
You're stalling, mister.
And move this back. That's much better. There's a lot less peeking going on. Anyway, no, I was going to say, it is summer. For all intents and purposes, it is summer. Would you agree with that statement, Storm?
I'm going to, based on temperatures, if not the actual solar and galactic activity, yes, summer.
Yes.
Summer.
I am, of course, speaking only to those of us in the northern hemisphere of the globe.
Not that fake summer that they have, you know, you folks down under. It's a fine summer, but it's fake.
It is summer, and it being summer means the onset of the problem that grows exponentially, I would say, with age and slightly increasing girth. That, of course, being the problem of the sweaty butt.
Oh, sure. It's universal, I think.
And my question to you and to the people out there is, I have never found a satisfactory solution to this. I don't want to give the impression that I am walking around with like a cup of water sloshing around in my underwear at all times.
You're not like an air conditioner unit that is several years old and just has a steady drip out of the pan.
Yeah, we're really talking. We're really talking more sort of a level of humidity, a degree of moisture, which is not necessarily constant, but certainly regular enough to be annoying during the hot, muggy months.
And certainly out of doors.
Yes, absolutely. When I'm moving around or out of doors or generally in a temperature over 88 degrees. The problem can rear its ugly head, so to speak. And my question is, I've never really found a satisfactory solution for it. But that being said, I have never used, it's not like I've gone and tried many things. Usually it involves my just at some point stopping, availing myself of a rest facility and taking care of the problem. I have never tried any of your powders or your salves or ointments.
I assume you're not talking about my salves and powders and ointments.
The royal yore, the authorial yore.
Sure, because I will lay you to waste if you touch my salves and powders and ointments.
Oh, God, I have learned that lesson the hard way, my friend. Your salves and powders and ointments remain steadfastly untouched by my hands. Trust me on that.
Or mine, for that fact.
No, they're heirlooms. That's why they're in that locked cabinet, the salve cabinet.
Yes, the family salves.
The family salves, that's a front runner. Title
anyway,
of the podcast.
Anyway, so you've not availed yourself.
I have never tried like the Gold Bond powder or talcum powder or anything like that because I don't even have a real reason why. I could say I sort of worry that it'll turn into a paste like that one episode of Friends. but I honestly just have never tried it. So now I ask you, the podcast audience and or Storm, if you've ever tried it, if it has any efficacy.
I've got to say I don't have as much difficulty with the bum sweats.
Uh-huh.
I have to say part of it is, as is documented, I lost an enormous amount of weight.
You did.
And my butt, when I gain weight, I gain more in my butt than most places, as it's sizable even under the best of circumstances. So when I dropped the weight, I think I dropped a lot of the sweat. But I might try, you know, maybe the Gold Bond thing. I can see that being afraid of the butt paste. That's undesirable.
Mm-hmm.
Have you thought about chamois underwear?
No, that is like some sort of system of buttresses or trellises.
I mean, I've never seen it before.
Oh, chamois. But... I thought you meant shimmy. I thought you meant like something that involved like wedging some shims in there. But now I see you're talking about like a ShamWow undergarment of a sort.
Right, because that's all I think ShamWow really is. Chamois. That's where they get the sham part.
Yeah.
Or because it's, you know... I don't know. I've never used it, but a ripoff. But I doubt it. It's more of the sham.
The wow part is the wow. You just got people to pay a ridiculous amount of money for a chamois.
And imagine how much you could charge if you tailored it into an undergarment.
Wow, that is an entirely untapped market. I would be on the phone to Billy West right now if such a thing were possible without the use of a medium.
Yeah. So that's my advice to you. Maybe this will be the poll for the week. Or just a question.
Oh, wait, is it Billy West? I totally got that name wrong, didn't I? What's the dude who died?
Oh, well, it wasn't him. It was Screamy Beaterton.
Oh, right, that's right. Mr. beat up some woman, went to jail.
Yeah. A 10-minute mark was 2 minutes ago.
Yes, it was. But that is a question for all of you out there. Any reliable... paste-free solutions for the muggy butt,
and I think we've done our duty on that one.
Yeah, more than get it because it's a double entendre because you said duty.
You just got your potty in the toilet or something.
Well, I have been talking about my butt for the last 10 minutes, so
let's sigh.
thank you, Pepe Le Pew.
Okay.
Actually, technically, that was the female cat in a Pepe Le Pew cartoon, I believe.
It was. And I would like to congratulate us both at this point for not talking about Felicia's butt.
Yes, as was suggested to us by more than a few people.
Pretty much everyone after it appeared in the Twitter feed.
Yeah. Twitter is sort of when they call it a hive mind, it really kind of is a hive mind insofar as it all moves in the same direction.
Go ahead. Seeing as we've taken a request.
Yes.
Do you want to jump straight into, three options.
Three options.
I mean, it's an infinite world, but here are three options.
Yeah, let's play the bootleg.
Option one is we recap, this past weekend of Woodstocks. Option two is we look ahead to the Woodstock San Diego Comic-Con, which yes is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And option three is the not topical, somewhat reminisce-y thing.
We spent the last 12-13 minutes talking about. I guess it wasn't really reminiscing about our butts, but I was going to say, let's very quickly get the details out at the end of the show for the upcoming Wootstock. I don't think we need to dwell on that one too much. I only have a couple of things to say about the past Wootstocks. I don't want to go into, we say this every time, but I really don't want to go into particular detail about what happened when and all, because there's plenty of reviews. Like, we posted one on our website, and Will and people who've just blogged about it. There's plenty of discussion of what happened. I may have a couple of comments, but nothing in detail. So if we want to do that, I think we can get that out of the way in 5 to 7 minutes.
I agree. I only have a couple of things to say as well.
Sure.
So
let's do that.
Oh, sure. Let's do it. Well, first of all, well, it's covered how freaking awesome a time we have there. I would particularly like to call out the folks who did original content for Wootstock, which I thought was awesome.
Yes.
In particular, John Scalzi.
Sci-fi fantasy author.
And a fave of the Pollen Storms.
And all-around good guy.
Yep. Wrote this really funny monologue as if he were a vice principal of an interspecies high school, which was quite well received.
Yes.
And the Riff Tracks folk who came, that would be Kevin Murphy and Bill Corbett.
Yep.
They wrote a couple of new songs and performed.
Mm-hmm.
Just for the Wootstocks.
Yep.
And Peter Sagal, who is the host of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yes.
And he actually comes from the theater world.
Yeah, he was a playwright for a while at first.
And really, you know, once a playwright, always a playwright. And
that old saying.
Yeah, that's what they say in bicycles and stuff. And I was so tickled that this was like a platform, an opportunity to write a piece, which he did, that is called I Henchmen. And there's only, I think, one YouTube video of it out there of any decent quality.
Yeah, I think there's some audio and one really good, reasonably good video of it. Yeah.
Absolutely brought the house down in Chicago.
Yep.
And just full of heart. And I don't want to recap everything that was in there.
Mm-hmm.
But do seek that out.
I think we link to it in our summary post. If we
do.
If we didn't, we will by the time we get this podcast up.
So, you know, again, there is certainly plenty of praise for everyone. But that I love that Wootstock is sort of becoming a place where folks can try different things and that audiences can experience those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I have to say about that.
Sure. That's all I have to say about that.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So you covered a lot of what I was going to say. That makes it even shorter. I was going to say it still amazes me how great a time everyone is having backstage. Which,
yeah.
And I don't say that to be like, hey, check out how awesome all the famous people are, mm-hmm. having an awesome party like People Magazine style or anything. As much as I say, I think that feeling and that spirit really spills out onto the stage and shows. And it is exactly the kind of thing we were hoping to make happen when we were all first talking about Wootstock. In fact, one of our abiding rules when we are considering people as possible Wootstock guests, one of the very first things we consider is whether or not they're a dick.
Yep.
If
they should not be a dick.
That is, yes, correct. They should not be. If it has been heard from what we consider to be reliable sources, whether firsthand or reliable secondhand sources, that a particular person under consideration is, shall we say, not so pleasant to work with, they are no longer under consideration.
And at this point, I would like to tie this in with another Twitter request.
Sure.
And it was Uppity Women, and that's women with a Y, who asked, how do you determine who to invite to Wootstocks?
Very good question.
And so go ahead and finish. But this is indeed, if not the first thing, it's critical.
Yeah. Well, that was one of them. I'll jeté a little bit and you jump in when you feel free to. There's a number of considerations when we pick people going to Wootstock. One of our foremost is we try and draw as many people as many guests from the local area. That's defined a little broadly, but, you know, when we do a Wootstock in Chicago, we try and get as many Chicago people as possible, and that's kind of what that term means. So I guess I didn't really need to explain it, but, you know, partly it's just a budgetary consideration because it costs a lot of money to fly a bunch of people in, and we'd like to actually not lose money at the end of the night. But it also, we want each, you know, this has been pointed out in many blog reviews lately about the show. Another thing we were hoping at the start was to make each Wootstock unique, much like snowflakes or women's breasts. No two are the same. You think I'm going to get in trouble for that last comment?
I was hoping you were just going to plow straight through.
No, no, I want to dwell a bit. I literally haven't used that metaphor since college, but it has always been a favorite of mine.
Sure, it's a goodie.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's not judging them; it's actually celebrating them. Each is unique and beautiful in their own special way.
I'm
talking about snowflakes, really.
Yeah,
at this point.
Unique is unique. You know, it is a qualifier in and of itself and denotes nothing else.
Yeah. So anywho, we do like for each Wootstock to have its own particular flavor, and a certain local appeal, which is why we always try and bring in a number of hometown folk.
But it gets even trickier than that.
How so, Storm?
Well, actually, let me back up a little bit, and speaking of the local thing, that's actually, no one has complained about this, but it's something that is on our minds, is we did not have a lot of women in the past weekend's worth of Wootstocks.
This is true.
And mostly that is because at the time we booked these Wootstocks, we've mostly been drawing on people that we know directly in these cities or that we know secondhand. And we looked, and we just didn't have any direct connections on folks in Chicago and Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
But where it gets tricky, moving on, is that it's also a calculus of having all the right pieces in the show. And I feel like we're only now at the point where we kind of know, like, how much music do you want to have?
Mm-hmm.
How much pure comedy? And then we have what we've started calling, or at least I have, the Matt Fraction slot.
I like to think of it as the change of pace slot.
Or the gravity slot, which is where a guest that it might be a little bit funny, it might be a little bit educational, it's certainly going to be entertaining and engaging,
mm-hmm.
but it's something that after you have listened to the presentation, whatever it is, makes you reflect a little bit.
Yep.
Or make you realize something about yourself or the world, not to be all, you know, serious and heavy.
Yeah.
But I do like to think that this isn't purely about grab-assing and, you know, and sending up memes.
I think you're going to get in more trouble for grab-assing than I will about my thing about breasts.
I didn't say what kind of ass I was grabbing. I could be grabbing my own ass.
You could be grabbing,
since this is about my butt.
Grabbing a burro.
Yes, I am grabbing my burro. Notice I did not say that in a Hispanic accent.
Yes, or just a really, really terrible Hispanic accent.
No, sort of going for a very tired person.
Which is what you are, I'm guessing.
No, actually, I feel pretty good.
Oh, good.
Anyway. So that's part of it, too.
It's not all just about the monkey shines and the giggles. We do like to have a little substance in there.
But, I mean, that's like pulling back out again, just that, and I'm not going to get in trouble for that either.
I wasn't going to say anything.
You were thinking it. So, but the idea that you have all these pieces, and we're learning what the right balance is, and we've already, in these past Wootstocks, have had to turn down folks that you know are friends and that we know will do great in front of the Wootstock crowd, but that the you know that it's hard to make the balance work.
It is very tough, and we're working on that for the San Diego Wootstock.
A Paul and Storm recommends.
Oh, go ahead, go to town right now.
Speaking of that gravity spot or the serious spot, whatever it is. In Minneapolis, we had Professor James Kakalios,
yes,
who did this really excellent for lack of a better term and for what it, I guess it is, a lecture about the physics of superheroes.
Yeah, he teaches an entire class at University of Minnesota, I guess?
Yep, that's right.
Under that name.
But does a terrific job of bridging these worlds, and also, like he describes it, as he was into comics before he was into really anything else, and that's what brought him into the world of physics.
Yep.
And I'm not going to rehash his whole act, but of course he does have a book, and if you either have been interested in getting into physics, or maybe you have a child that you want to encourage to get into math and physics, that I think that would be an excellent
it
way
is.
To go.
It is. I've been, I'm not too far into it, but I have been reading it a bit, and it's a very enjoyable and highly accessible read. You do not have to know a bunch of physics concepts or math to read it, if that's the kind of thing that scares you off. But yeah, that I really enjoy. Apparently he's, from reading the reviews and blog posts about the show, he is apparently sort of a minor celebrity among Minneapolis area geeks. Lots of people were extremely glad that he was there, as were we. It was very cool to see a physics professor rock star.
Yes. That to me is the very soul of Wootstock, is making physics professors and people who administer Xbox, you know, like Stephen Toulouse, into rock stars. Yep. I love that.
Yep. We are kingmakers, sir.
Now, if we are for now have said our piece on Wootstock, comic books actually touches on my non-topical subject.
Sure.
Comic books. I have to confess, and I think we've both talked about this in the past, and confess to you folks, that neither one of us has comic books as one of our core geek competencies.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate them, and we particularly now appreciate, like, the Sandman series and, you know, sort of the reinvention of comic books. But as a kid growing up, I was never into them, and I plumb my depths to figure out why. Like, the question why is always in the back of my mind. Drives me nuts.
Right.
But there it is. And I came up with some memories and some answers.
Okay.
As with most things in life, your early exposure to them is going to dictate how you relate to them moving forward.
Right.
Now, nothing is set in stone. Of course, you can change patterns, etc. Sometimes it's hard, sometimes it's easier.
Right.
My first exposure to comic books was at our local little shitty toy store in the Montgomery Village Mall. And if you know what that is, you know what I'm talking
about.
Was it
a KB Toy and Hobby, or was it a mom and pop toy store?
This was before malls were quite organized enough to have KBs everywhere. And this wasn't even a big enough mall for a KB.
Mm-hmm.
It was a place called Jeremiah's.
Ooh, sounds awesome.
And before you speculate, yes, there was a large sign on the front that was a bullfrog. So obviously some hippies had decided they were going to sink their fortune into this toy store
hey,
and open
man,
it.
Man, you got a lot of comics and toys in your basement.
Exactly.
Can we sell them?
Yeah, let's open a store in the Montgomery Village Mall.
Everybody loves the Montgomery Village Mall, man.
Peace, man.
Peace, man.
But it wasn't, it was a Peace Man kind of place. No, it was a very square place. They didn't even, I don't think they even had, they may have had comic books, but it wasn't a big part of what they did.
Right.
But, of course, it was pretty much the only entertainment in the very, very planned Montgomery Village. More on that another time. You go up to Montgomery Village Mall and you just kick around, and there's a toy store. And this one day, they were passing out a free comic book, as they do to promote things that people want to promote. And this one was an Evel Knievel comic book.
Oh, yes, that's right. You've told me this story.
Yes. So, you know, you have your storied fabled comics and your, you know, your X-Men that have these characters that overlap and develop, and you get to know them, and they got cool villains. Well, this was just barely not an advertisement for, I don't know, whatever Evel Knievel shit they were selling at the
time. Probably the Evel Knievel stunt cycle set.
Stunt cycle, which I believe we covered already, but thank you again for buying that for me.
Oh,
I finally
yeah.
got that in my late 30s. so the first comic book, really, that I ever read was this crappy advertisement. And the second one, which, Paul, you've probably had a run-in with as well,
mm-hmm.
was the Bob's Big Boy comic book.
Yes, the Bob's Big Boy comic book.
Again, the point of this comic book was not to entertain. That was a secondary consideration.
Yep.
The point was to have something to sucker the kids, because you could go to Bob's Big Boy, and they would give you this comic book, and every time it was the same. Bob, Chunky Bob, in his checkered bullshit outfit, and his girlfriend, and I don't say that in a romantic way.
His friend who happened to be a girl.
Or maybe not. She may not have even had genitals. I don't think either of them did. And their dog, who probably also did not have genitals.
Yeah, although that's... Well, moving on.
Moving on. The important thing is not to dwell. They would traipse around doing something stupid. You know, I don't even remember exactly what. Maybe they'd, you know, make a mud pie. I don't know. And then decide it wasn't tasty enough. And then Bob would have a great idea. And they'd end up at Bob's Big Boy, his fucking restaurant. And he'd stuff his fucking face with a burger and fries. That was like... And I'm very bitter about this. And that was every single one of these comics.
I can hear the bitterness dripping through the microphone.
And I still don't mind Bob's Big Boy, but I guess that's the thing.
Yeah.
Is that with that being the second comic book, two points
right.
make a line.
Well, it was, yeah, and, to fool you once, shame on you, but fool you twice.
Right, shame on Bob's Big Boy.
Yeah.
And that pretty much... cemented what comic books were to me, at least for a long time. Every once in a while, I'd see them in the dentist's office and read them and enjoy them, but that's not the best place to really develop a relationship with something like comic books.
Yeah. I too, never really had much of an interest in comic books myself. I have a couple of theories as well, not nearly as lengthy or intriguing. The first theory is, not to get all sort of Dennis the Menace, Leave It to Beaver, but there was only one store that might have had comic books within walking distance of my house growing up, the 7-Eleven, about a quarter of a mile from my house. And they, for the most part, did not carry comic books, or maybe they carried a couple, but it was certainly not the kind of thing where there was a big rack right near the door and all the new, you know, Incredible Hulk and Spider-Man would come in every week. I do not remember that. And so I would have had to work, as in get my mom to take me somewhere to go and get comic books. And that combined with the fact that I didn't really have any friends who were particularly into comic books, there was no sort of inroad into the comics world for me when I was growing up.
Yeah.
And the other part of my theory would be that I watched a shit ton of TV.
Yeah.
I mean, I still do, but I mean, when I was a kid, I watched a lot of TV. And that sort of fulfilled my, that part of my brain that needed the imaginary outlet thing. And, you know, certainly more passive, I suppose, than
sitting there reading something. Your fantasy quotient was covered.
Yeah, I didn't need a whole crap load of escapism. Not that that's what everybody needs when they read comics, but I've heard that said for a lot of people that it provided, you know, this outlet for people that otherwise didn't have it, or a need an itch that needed to be scratched, so to speak. And I didn't have that quite as hard. I think I really enjoyed TV, and reading comic books would have taken away from my TV time.
I wonder also, and for our comic fans out there, well, we were mostly, you know, kids of the 70s, at least of the age when you would typically become hooked on comics.
Yep.
was the 70s a rough patch for the comic book, or is it just...
That's a good question. I don't know. I've heard that the 80s were a particularly good time for comics, but I don't know what point during the 80s. Like, I know, you know, Watchmen and such came out, but we were a little older then, I believe.
And now that you mentioned it, there wasn't a place locally, as I said, Jeremiah's didn't really carry comics.
And there was,
maybe their distribution operation had gone to shit.
Yeah, and I can't think of a comic book shop that existed, at least certainly not a convenient one, when I was that age, too. So another good question for our comic-y brethren.
Maybe part of it had to do with living patterns. Think about it. Mm-hmm. Like, when comics first exploded, most who were reading them were probably in urban settings, right? Where you just walk down to your corner store. I lived in a planned community where you really had to work to get to anything. It's not like you can just pop around the corner casually.
Mm-hmm.
And you also were in, you know, it was a fairly suburban area, that it wasn't like there was a ton of, maybe just where we lived.
Could be. Don't know. Tell us, internet.
It's a mystery. So we'll think of some question related to this, so you're not just talking about the bum sweats.
Let me take a quick browse through the suggestions. There was one I thought I had seen that I wanted to talk about briefly. Favorite flavor of ice cream was requested by Refrained. For me, I hate to say it, it's vanilla, specifically Friendly's ice cream vanilla.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
As with most things involving sweets, if it is a high quality chocolate, especially if it has little flecks and chunks of dark chocolate, that is for me. But I like pretty much every ice cream except for mint chocolate chip.
You can keep it. Oh, it's from the devil.
Yeah. Especially if it's nuclear green. Bad.
Here's one last quickie, I think, that we can cover and then maybe wrap things up, as we're at almost the 37-minute mark soon. Yep. But this is one I don't think we've answered this on the podcast before. Edwardica has requested the history of our tribute band jokes.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if we've talked about that.
We're
certainly not the first people to do that kind of joke.
You tell me if I am wrong. Feel free to tell me if I'm completely wrong. I thought that I brought that in.
You did, as emo band.
Yes. I could be wrong about this part of it, but I seem to recall my first seeing of that joke in the modern era, so to speak, in, I think it was the AV Club, the Onion AV Club comments section. Starting out, it just sort of, when someone would say some particularly random phrase, someone would respond to it with, said random phrase is the name of my emo band.
Right.
Now, there have been variations of that going on for quite some time, as I have seen in further research. You know, one variation is the, oh, I played bass for random phrase back in 72 or, you know, whatever date. And things like that. But it tickled me, and we pulled it out on stage where we would start making random phrases being our emo bands while we were opening for Colton, and it would spill into his set as well.
And for a long time, it was just emo band, and I don't remember who changed the game on it, but once the game changed, we ran with it.
we started going to other genres, and then what really opened it wide was when we started doing specific cover bands.
I believe I was the first one to cover band.
Would not be surprised if you were. I will give you that credit, even though I don't know for sure.
But even though we may not have started that, I think, and they're probably referencing the fact that at Woodstock, the Captain's Wife's Lament, our private song, now the intro has run as long as 20 minutes with us just cracking either emo band or, you know, these cover band jokes or whatever the heck. Mostly whatever the heck.
Yeah, and as a number of people have asked if we've kept track of those, unfortunately we never have. We're far too lazy to write these things down after the show, and we don't really think of them ahead of time. There are occasionally some we will go back to, or at least the name of the actual band. There's occasion we will dip in that well every so often, because some of them are just really easy. But we try not to have them pre-planned or repeat them very much. And we don't have the fervent, ridiculous, rabid fan base that would go back and listen to every recording we've ever done to catalog them. And that's not me fishing for somebody to do that. I'm just, you know, just saying no. That's just the way it is.
And we're incompetent.
Yes, we are also incompetent. We've occasionally intended to jot them down and, of course, never remember to.
No, no.
You know why?
Why is that?
Because neither of us has an iPad.
I can see the justification for that line that item would, in the Paul and Storm budget.
that's sort of, we're going to have a band meeting immediately following this podcast. That's how I'm lodging my request that the band pay for an iPad for me.
Yeah.
And maybe for you.
Yeah, well, I got the ukulele.
That's true. You got a ukulele, and you don't like Steve Jobs anyway. So,
I never said that. I look too much. I look too much like Steve Jobs to not appreciate Steve Jobs.
Look down at your phone, sir. What phone do you carry?
What? Just because I have an awesome droid, which is actually about to give up the ghost because I dropped it 3 weeks into having it, and now the cracked screen
is it blocking letters on the type pad now or something?
Well, the go back button is busted, and sometimes it will only let me type the letter B, now, which is handy for some words, like B. But for most things, it's an inconvenience.
Yeah. Now, are you going to go and just try and get the screen replaced, or are you just going to go and get yourself a whole new phone, or have you investigated that yet?
I haven't totally investigated. In fact, folks out there, if you know a good cheap way to repair, like, can you just put some like clear nail polish on a crack and seal it?
That'll do it.
Do they have touch capacitive nail polish yet? Do they? I hope so.
That'd be an awesome trick. Wow, we've broken the 41-minute mark at this point. Look at us go.
Speaking of incompetence in ukuleles.
Yes.
I don't know if you've had sort of a private discussion in public now. I don't
sure.
know if you've had a chance to listen to the latest version of that song.
Oh, that song. Yeah. I'm guessing you're requesting that we maybe tack that onto the end of this podcast?
I can't think of anything else to do with it.
Sure. Why not? Why don't we debut a brand new Paul and Storm song?
Yeah.
At the end of this podcast. Aren't you glad you stuck through to the very end?
That's right. A little reward, a lanyap.
That's right.
You know what?
While we are here at the very end, somebody has just put in a request, specifically Earbox, has put in a request that would we reveal the sources of the opening and closing music? We've been wondering that for a while. You should perhaps look at the podcast Frequently Asked Questions because it is listed there. I say that not to be pedantic so much as I do not remember the official names of them. I do know the opening song is called The Buy Cracky Beat, which is it's a commercial theme for a candy bar called the Buy Cracky Bar,
whose theme propelled it to national fame, which endures to this day,
to national prominence. But they should be listed there, and glad you enjoy them because we like them too.
And I guess we have two gigs coming up. One is Woodstock San Diego Comic Con.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that next week and in the coming weeks, I think. But it's going to be awesome.
And it's a little ways off, but in August we are doing a Paul and Storm show.
That's right.
In the D.C. area, Vienna, Virginia, at Jam and Java.
That's sort of our home base. It's actually the place where we did the very first Paul and Storm show performance ever, even though it technically wasn't Paul and Storm then.
Nope, it was just a gig.
It was Storm and Paul helping sing backup on all four of his songs. Or I think it was three.
It was four, but that was far too long of a title for an act, so we changed it after that.
That's right.
But go to paulandstorm.com to get exact dates and other exciting information and all the stuff that we didn't do details on, and to join the Brigade of Minions, which is the Switchblade Lotharios. Yes.
Yes.
And unless Paul has anything else
which
to say.
Which he does not.
Then I am Storm.
And I am Paul.
And we've been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. Niagara Falls, slowly I turn.
Go do things.
Thank you. So what do you do when all you've ever done is fuck things up? It's not that I don't care. It's not that I don't pay enough attention. But you can bring me anywhere, and I'll fuck things up. So before you go and do something foolish, like spending your time with me, just so's you know, I'm gonna find a way to fuck it up. Fuck it up. Fuck it up. I'm gonna fuck it up.